This is kind of new to you, actually.
Okay. So we'll start because some of the people have been around for a while, and some of the people are veterans, been around a whole long while. So I'll be looking to make sure that you're keeping up with me. Okay. So, interesting topic. Love and detachment. Kind of like this way and that way. Opposites, apparently. But not really. In relationships. So, there are a number of places to begin, but I'll think what I'll do is begin with summarizing an entire presentation in 5 minutes. One of the standard presentations that I have made at a number of university facilities is a topic, again, it's deliberately with some tension in it, or currency of relationships, pure and impure. So, relationships, start with a dictionary definition. A dictionary definition, straight from the dictionary, is an exchange between two or more persons where something that is valued by both is exchanged. A relationship between two or more persons, like a business relationship, or whatever relationship, where two or more persons are involved, and there's something exchanged with which both hold as some value. So something that people hold as value, that's one way to call that is currency. Supposing we're not in the modern times or in earlier than modern times, and people didn't have money, they had some ability. So I make furniture. So I get some wood and some hammers and saws and nails and make a chair or a table. And then there's a gentleman over there that has grain. And I say, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a chair or a table for so 4 bags of grain. He said, I'll tell you what, I have a door, I'll give you 5 bags of grain if you just fix my door and the table. They said, no, I'll take it for 4 bags of grain. That's good, I'll fix your door and here's the table. So we do some exchange. And it's a relationship of, you know, the one person and another person. And fast forward over time, and then it becomes money, and then there's business relationships, and people know all about that kind of relationship. But when it's just a relationship where it isn't some commodity or goods or services, it's just a relationship, then what is that thing that both persons value? And it's commonly, just as simple terms, is emotion. This person conveys some emotion, and the other person appreciates, and you know, the subject and object exchange goes back and forth, and they have a relationship. So that's like a simple frame. Now, the Vedic teachings, specifically one of our teachers, Rupa Goswami, explains there's, according to Vedic wisdom, there are types of relationships according to the type of emotion that's exchanged. And there's a simple way to put it is there's the exchange of love and there's exchange of other types of emotions that are secondary, but it's based upon the loving relationship. And when there's a loving relationship, the science teaches in a kind of building of intensity, there's neutrality, friendship, servitude, friendship, parental affection, and conjugal love. Each of those, there's some exchange So let's say neutral. You enroll in a class and you sit down in the same classroom with a bunch of other people. There's a relationship because you're sitting with those bunch of other people. And then, you know, you drop your pen on the floor and somebody picks it up and you say, oh, thank you. So there's a little something, a little exchange beyond just like sitting together in the same class. And maybe a little bit later on, there's a homework question and you say, you know, what's the answer to question number 3? I don't exactly get it. And they say, oh, thank you, now I understand. And so there's some exchange beyond neutral where there's some services exchanged. And over a period of time, more than just services exchanged, out of class you go and have lunch together or go for a walk together or talk together or do stuff together, and some friendship is formed. And as the science of rasa or relationships has it, sometimes someone is in a position where they act as a well-wisher kind of protector, like Arjuna did when Will, you sat down and recognized you were kind of new, so he wanted to help make sure you knew what's happening here. So like, you know, a kind gesture where there's, you're looking after another person. It's like it's called parental affection. There's a vatsalya rasa in Sanskrit. And then another is conjugal rasa between boyfriend and girlfriend or whatever it is these days. So relationships have different rasas or flavors or moods and different degrees of thickness and intensity to them. But the thing that's valued is some exchange of some kind of emotion back and forth. Subject, object, alternating back and forth. And that's a relationship. So I'm halfway done with this half an hour presentation. There are effective, there are relationships that are meaningful, there's relationships that break apart, and largely they break apart when it's the persons don't understand one another. You've had relationships like that. Seems to happen in marriages more than desired. People get married with the idea that, you know, we love one another, and after some time they realize, you know, they didn't understand what they were getting into and they have a problem with it. You know, he didn't understand her or she didn't understand him, and the finger-pointing program. And the most effective, the punchline of all this, is to have an effective, loving relationship. It really requires understanding the other person and accepting the other person as they are. So we can speak about that on a worldly level, but I want to elevate it to a spiritual level, because the real identity of the person is not just the package, but it's the animating force within the package. It's the soul that's the life that's animating the body and the mind and the intelligence and all the different components that are moving, making life. To have a sustainable loving relationship, there has to be some knowledge of the soul. And then ultimately, the relationship that one soul has with another soul, by acknowledging the commonness between the two, is they both emanate from the same source. The final part of this presentation that I made at different places is a little slide from Mother Teresa, where she had on her wall in Calcutta a bunch of sayings that said, if you try to do good for other people, sometimes you'll be criticized as being motivated. Do good for other people anyway. Sometimes you'll do something that you give your whole life to make something wonderful, and shortly somebody destroys it, make something wonderful anyways. And like that, you know, continue. People may misread your motivations when you're trying to be of assistance to them. Be of assistance to them anyways. And on and on and on. And at the end is, If there's some breakdown in relationship between you and another person, don't worry. It wasn't in the beginning. It wasn't about you and them anyway. It's about you and you and God. Because in a relationship, ultimately, God is at the center. God is at the center because that's the way it is. On the plane of absolute reality, meaning we're a bunch of living entities, a bunch of souls seated here from different backgrounds and makeups and personalities and so forth. And the something that we have in common, according to the message of Bhagavad Gita, is minimally, there's a soul that's animating each and every one of us. There's a nice verse in Bhagavad Gita. This is the Bhagavad Gita part of the class. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gavi hastini shuni chaiva sopakecha pandita samadarshana. From Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, a pundit, a learned person, sees equally all living entities because he sees there's a spirit soul animating all living entities and not just the people in this room or even not just people out of this room, not even all people, all forms of life. Anything that's living has a spirit soul animating within. And each of those spirit souls are part of the Supreme Soul. There's a link or connection. So when we have a relationship with one another, we have a relationship based upon our common relationship with the Supreme. So this is a spiritual conception, but my relationship with each person is assisting them in their service to the Supreme and restoring and establishing very nicely their relationship with the Supreme. And that's the nature of the relationship. Whether it's friend and friend, or lover and lover, mother and father, parent and child, and whatever the relationship is. Ultimately, the thing that bonds us and binds us all together is the Supreme. And I'm going to speak very quickly, just an application of this principle in three different ways. One is Bhagavad Gita itself. Will, are you familiar with Bhagavad Gita at all? Zero.
I was just reading the back one.
Okay. Okay, on the front cover, you'll see a picture of Krishna driving the chariot. There's a chariot in the front part. And the person sitting in the chariot is his friend. His friend's name is Arjuna. Arjuna is a warrior. And the scene is, just before a battle is about to begin, Arjuna, the warrior, ask Krishna, can you bring my chariot in between the two armies so I can see who's set up to fight? And right in the middle of the battlefield, he throws down his bow and says, I can't do it. I'm out of here. And he gives his ethical reasons why he just can't do it. And then this whole discussion takes place. One of the reasons is, on the other side are my cousins. And the other side is my teacher. And the other side is my grandfather. I can't fight these people because I have this relationship with them. And so, I'm out of here. I'll just stop being a warrior and I'll go to the forest and become a mendicant, live in a cave and, you know, let them have the kingdom. But I really don't know what's right to do. So Arjuna asks Krishna, please tell me what I should be doing. What's my duty? So, at the very beginning, just like at the very beginning of this little presentation, is Arjuna hears from Krishna about the soul. Let's say it this way. Before you can understand what your duty is, you have to understand who you are. And then you can understand what your duty is. Same. If you want to have a relationship, you have to understand both who you are and who the other person you have a relationship, wish to have a relationship with. And if you don't, then it's dysfunctional. You don't understand the other person. You try to do something. The intention may be to do something, and that's nice, that's pleasing, but you may miss the target altogether if you don't understand the person. So, after hearing about the science of the soul, then further, how to connect the soul to the Supreme, Arjuna's ready to do the indication that Krishna gives him, what his duty is. And Arjuna, this is example number two, Arjuna was one of five brothers. So those of you that are familiar, you know, but this is for Will. The five brothers were called the Pandavas because their father's name was Pandu. And as the sons, they were Pandavas. And their father had died when they were all young boys. So they were raised by their grandfather and their mother. And their mother's name was Kunti. So after this battle was over, the Pandavas became the rightful king as they were due to become, except others were had stolen the kingdom and tried to kill them. You know, they weren't nice people. And Arjuna was ready to let them have the kingdom. It's okay. I'll do something else besides being a king. But Arjuna wanted the virtuous Pandavas to rule. So after the battle, the virtuous Pandavas were enthroned as king. Now, Krishna, who was there throughout the whole thing, he's ready to go back where he came from, back to Dwarka. And it's a whole scene. There's in the palace courtyard, there's many, many, many throngs of people, and Krishna's about to get on his chariot, and Queen Kunti comes weaving her way through all the crowds of the people, because she's the queen, she can do that. And she stands right in front of Krishna and pleads with Krishna, don't go. And she gives says many nice things. Queen Kunti's prayer, as it's called. And I wanted to read two of them. Because in this scene where Krishna is going to, in Dwarka, Kunti's father and parents and all of the relatives on her parents' side are over there in Dwarka. And over here, where Krishna is about to leave from in Hastinapur, it's her sons and her and their immediate, you know, relations. So they're going to be feeling great separation from Krishna when Krishna goes. But her relatives over there, they're feeling separation, so they're going to be happy that Krishna comes back. And she's torn between her sons and her father and all of those other relatives, the outer dynasty. And she's, you know, stretched back and forth. She doesn't want Krishna to go, and she wants Krishna to go. rejoin her father's side, her family's side of their residence, because they miss Krishna. He's been away for some time. So she is going to read two verses, two prayers. O Lord of the universe, O soul of the universe, O personality of the form of the universe, please sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis, because I'm torn in these two directions, my sons and my father's side. Take away that bond of attachment for both. O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. And I want to read a little bit of what Prabhupada writes. Queen Kunti's affection for her sons and for her parents' family is not out of range in devotional service, because the service of the Lord and the service of the devotees are identical. Sometimes, service to the devotee is more valuable than service to the Lord, but here, the affection of Kunti for her sons and for the Vrishnis was due to family relation. This tie of affection, in terms of material relation, is the relation of Maya, because the relationships of the body
or the mind are due to the influence of the external energy. Relations of the soul established in relation with the Supreme Soul are factual relations. When Kunti wanted to cut off the family relation, she meant to cut off the relation of the skin. The skin relation is the cause of material bondage, but the relation of the soul is the cause of freedom. So basically she's asking, I'm caught between two different sets of personalities because of the relation of this body to my sons and the relation of this body as the daughter of my father and mother. So kindly remove the material portion of that affection so that all that remains is the spiritual portion. So love is wanted by all living entities. The message of Queen Kunti is, let my love, so I'm appealing same way in this topic, that our love for others, the affection that we feel, go ideally and ultimately to the platform of the soul. Now, Kunti's up there, and we're not way up there like Kunti is. So it's not likely that we're going to have a similar prayer as Kunti is praying. But the principle is a very valuable and valid principle. Affection, real love, is soul to soul in relation to the Supreme Soul. Back to that example I was giving at the beginning of the currency of relationships. The thing that we value is the affection. And there's a natural affection that's there between parents and their children, or friend and friend, and whatever are the various relations, lover and beloved. It's natural. It's natural. As long as there's identification of the self, like Arjuna was doing at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, with the body, then he couldn't understand the right thing to do. We find ourselves in these situations. I was... one of the things, as I move around, is... I spend some time with parents who are concerned, because they're conscientious people, they're concerned about parenting and how to be good parents, how to help their children grow and be of good character, and so forth and so on, you know, what parenting is about. And the problem that some parents run into is they try so hard, they become attached, this is the detachment part of the message, that they lose their discrimination. They become so attached, their mind is bewildered, their intelligence is lost, and they can't even understand what their child is trying to communicate to them, or they're so intense that their child stops communicating. And, you know, the relationship becomes impeded. Their ability to do what they want to do gets dissipated, and there's difficulty. That's just, you know, the parenting side. And then friend and lover and beloved and all of those things. Where there is attachment, or we could say undue attachment, simply to the mental condition or the bodily condition of another, we lose sight of how we can be of best of service to that other person, best to help them be happy and grow in a healthy and, you know, progressive way. So detachment, this is the topic is love and detachment in relationships. So the detachment part isn't a I don't care kind of detachment, like cold, callous, I don't care detachment. Rather, the message of Bhagavad Gita teaches us that what is called detachment or renunciation is the same as attachment to the Supreme. Because one can't be truly detached without attachment to the Supreme. And when you're attached to the Supreme, boy, do you care about that spirit soul more than you did when you were not thinking of the Supreme. In fact, all the activities that you do, your studies or work or anything, relationships or cooking or playing the drum or whatever you do, if you're doing it as a offering of love to the Supreme, you're far more attentive. Whatever, pick anything. So a life of devotion to the Supreme is the best way to have a true loving relationship. And with that true loving relationship, one understands my function isn't as the enjoyer or the controller. It was just last night, Thursday night, at a little home program in somebody's home in Maryland. One man that's been coming for some time, and you know, they're studying Bhagavad Gita every Friday evening, just like we're doing. Every Friday evening, whole group of people. And he's been coming for like a year and a half. And they're already in chapter 12 Bhagavad Gita, after verse after verse after verse. So he's not new, but he was saying, admittedly, here's a problem I have. You know, I'm attached to the concept or the notion of being the enjoyer. You know, I do the work that I do because I want to enjoy the happiness of being the provider for my family. And I know that's, you know, that's not what Bhagavad Gita teaches. So how do I get to the place where I'm doing without attachment? Same, how can I have a relationship of love where it's not attachment in the material sense? Material sense is, I'm the enjoyer. The reason I have this relationship is, I give something to somebody, they satisfy me, and I satisfy them, and they satisfy me, and that's our relationship. It's like, if it's simply that, then supposing one person or the other person stops. It's like, you know, business deal. One's the supplier and the other's the purchaser, and somebody doesn't supply the way that you expected them to supply. Or the purchaser doesn't pay the way that it was, you know, they break the contract. It's over. Or you're in court because you violated the expectation of the other person. And relationships can very, very easily be like that too. Like, you know, consumer economics tells us you go and buy a pair of shoes to try a bunch of them on, you buy the one that looks nice and it feels good and you wear it for a year or two and then you get rid of it and get another one. Relationships can be like that too. Or it's just seen as a commodity. That, like, you know, it fits me. Not, you know, the exchange of something on a higher platform. To have meaningful relationships, it requires understanding the other person. I'm asserting from the message of Bhagavad Gita and other teachings, on the platform of the soul, acknowledging the Supreme. And with that, there's caring like anything, but detachment from the material sense. And so the last part, there's many nice examples, but one that I like very much is Prahlad. So except for Will, I think you all know who Prahlad is. Prahlad, little boy who had a super mean father, like really bad guy, Hiranyakashipu. He was the terror of the universe. He was the terrorist beyond any terrorist today. He was like a really mean person. And his son was very, very innocent and pure. And when his son exhibited his innocence and purity, his father couldn't stand it. He wanted to kill him. He tried to kill him. He couldn't kill him. Tried this mean, that mean, threw him off a cliff, fed him poison, put him in fire. Nothing worked. He couldn't kill him. He was protected all again and again. So he asked his son, you know, I'm the most powerful person in the whole universe. Even the controllers of the universe are afraid of me. I lift my eyebrows and they tremble because I'm like so powerful. But you're not afraid at all. Where are you getting your power? And his son said, I'm getting my power from the same place you are. From God. Oh! From God. Where is he? I'll kill him. Is he in this pillar? He's everywhere. He's in the pillar. He took his sword and smashed the pillar. And Lord Nrsingadev came out of the pillar and pounced on him and ripped him to pieces. And the personalities that saw this happen, those that were terrorized by this terrorist, went to offer prayers to Lord Nrsingadev to appease his anger, but he was still very angry. So they had Prahlad go forward and you offer something. Maybe he'll calm down. So Prahlad offered some very, very simple prayers, part of which was, I know that you want to offer me a benediction. So please don't ask me to take something because my spirit is demoniac and I'm born into demoniac family and so on and so on. So I'll ask for something horrible. So don't ask me to ask for something. But if there is something, if you really insist, then can you please forgive my father for all the horrible things that he's done and liberate him? Although he tried to kill me, no, doesn't matter. Forgive him for all the bad things he's done and elevate him to liberation. The Lord Nrsingadev said, it's already done. Because he's your father. And you're elevated, it's already done. So I asked for something else. Then he asked for all the other people that are suffering and struggling in this world. I don't want to go to the spiritual realm without their also being relieved. So please do something to help relieve them of their unnecessary struggle. It's a message of compassion and love. Although he was distressed for their condition, that looks like not attachment, looks like attachment. But he's attached to the Supreme, and therefore it's love supreme. Not only for the Supreme, but for other living entities also. With love that goes on to conclusion, love that goes to the spiritual entity within, connected to the Supreme living entity, then there's simultaneously there's genuine love and there's detachment in the worldly sense of attachment. There's not that kind of attachment. There's attachment to the soul and detachment from matter. We still care if someone's in a difficult situation or hungry or maimed or whatever it is. We certainly care. But the essence is the well-being of the soul. And if we can somehow attend to the well-being of the soul, then the well-being of the whole entity becomes enhanced and improved. So as we attend, say, to the needs of our friend or the needs of our children or the needs of our whatever it is, parents or the needs of whoever that we have a relationship with, the real happiness and the real standard of love is it must go also to the soul. Otherwise, it amounts to so many zeros. It's the person who's drowning in material existence continues to drown. And we don't want that. That's Prahlad Maharaj's message. And I've gone way over time. So some thoughts on love and detachment in relationships and see if there's some discussion on this topic from any of you.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
The questions?
You do?
Yeah. So, if everyone is a spirit soul and whatever relationship we have is just material, whatever attachment we have, whatever material attachment that we have is just temporary, so why is it that we have... the question is, should we have equal amount of love for every single human beings, just like how we have so much of love for me, I have a lot of love for my mother. Should I have as much love or more for equally for every single human beings in this world?
Depends on your consciousness, doesn't it? If you're Prahlad Maharaj, then yes. And you're not Prahlad Maharaj, and so there's natural not, you know, wrong, but natural affinity for those from whom we receive so much. Mothers and so many other persons who from whom we receive so much. If any, anyway, it's natural that there's special affinity for a mother. And as consciousness grows and grows and grows, one can see that other women besides one mother are mothers to somebody else. And so they're also mothers who are giving to so many, giving to other spirit souls. And so they're seen with great respect. Even with that, there's some special appreciation for mother, just like Prahlad requested, first of all, let my father be delivered. Natural. Although he had concern for all souls. So once his father was delivered because of his family relation with Prahlad, then please do the same for all souls. They're just entangled, like anything. Does that help? We have to function from where we are, not pretend that we're something that, like, that we're not. So from where we are, it's natural that there's special affection for those from whom we received so much. It's natural. The other would be, otherwise it would be unnatural and unwholesome. Then as consciousness goes higher or more spiritualized, then one can see the bigger picture besides this body and what I've received from certain persons within this body. They're instruments of God's will all over the place. And they're to be honored too. Honor then, and that condition goes especially to those who are carrying spiritual well-being and are delivering that spiritual well-being to others. Special affection goes for those who are carrying quantum of bhakti. While I've received so much from these persons and those persons and friends and mother and whatever, the opportunity to receive life's ultimate gift is available and it is freely being distributed to others from some very spiritually qualified persons, and so a special affection goes to them. And, you know, those who are maybe not in that most exalted position but are giving spiritual well-being to me, they hold a very special place for me amongst all souls. So, spiritual priorities adjust things as one becomes more spiritually enlightened or spiritually conscious. You're not satisfied. You got
an
expression. Question mark on your forehead there.
How we tend to discriminate between those who are able to provide us with love and also spiritual bliss. More, I mean, we tend to have...
Well, well-being. Well, so, spiritual well-being.
Yeah, spiritual well-being. But what about the five categories of relationship? Is that, how does that come in?
One who is one's spiritual well-wisher is like a spiritual father. As mother and father provide the body, a spiritual well-wisher provides the spiritual body or this well-being of the soul proper. So it's like that, like the servitorship towards a parental figure. At the same time, it's like one's dearmost friend also, well-wisher and friend. That's how it fits in. And that person serves as a representative of the Supreme Person with whom all of the relationships, the fullness of the relationships can be experienced. But the representative of that person, this one who assists one to come to that spiritual relationship.
And that is why the relationship between the student and his guru is so special.
Yes. Okay.
How can we assess, self-assess, that this relationship is doesn't have a material component?
How do we?
Self-assess.
Okay. Start with assuming that it has. That's safe. Supposing, you know, how long have you been coming here?
Last one year.
And you're doing some devotional practices and learning and studying and like that. Okay, so there's some, plus whatever you did previous to this, there's some foundation for spiritual attraction and spiritual awakening and spiritual wisdom. So that spiritual dimension is there, and there's most likely, some material portion that's there. So your question specifically is, how do we evaluate how much spiritual, on the other side of the pan scale, how much material? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, do you know that name? Prabhupada's spiritual master's father was one of our acharyas in our line. He spoke the following. Measure of how one is progressing spiritually is how attraction for being the enjoyer of things is subsiding. You have in your house some things, whatever those things are, your clothes or your shoes or your car or your, you know, whatever it is, things. The person whose spiritual consciousness is not strong is seeking happiness in interacting with those things. A person in spiritual consciousness is seeing those as instruments or facility for serving. The happiness is not as having those things and looking at those things and using those things. The happiness is in serving the Supreme. So detachment from affinity for matter is as a measure. And then similarly in your relationships. Yeah. And the flip side is when there is some, to the degree that there's attraction for hearing spiritual sound vibrations, whether it's kirtan or japa or discussing Bhagavad Gita or spiritual topics, the eagerness with which I have to hear those sound vibrations as a measure, or the absence of that, the waning of that is the other measure of spiritual consciousness or weakened spiritual consciousness that also plays its way into relationships. That's the litmus test. Or one of them. Yes. Say it again, please.
Is it important to love a lot of people?
Is it important to love a lot of people? That's an interesting question.
How do you decide the compatibility?
That's another question.
What was the question?
How are you to decide compatibility? Yes? I don't know of any scriptural statement that answers the first question. I just have, in discussions with those that I, like myself, have been very dedicated to the process of devotional service, the sharing is, if you have even one or two or a few very, very, very close relationships, you're very fortunate. Very close, confidential, where everything is transparently disclosed and there's complete acceptance and understanding, and the other person is there to help you grow, not just say, pat you on the head, say, oh, that's good, I'm okay, you're okay, but wants to help you grow. If you have one or two or three, you're very fortunate indeed. So one answer to your question is, it's important to have qualitative relationship or relationships more than it's have many, collect many. And those many, a lot of that many is proportionate to, you know, the exchange that you have, and now the second question, how you resonate, how well you feel that you can understand and relate and connect with the other person. And that has a lot to do with material compatibility than it does spiritual, because of our stage of, you know, spiritual progress. So, I don't know you. Well, at least we're just meeting. Maybe you were at that when I was here last time, but we didn't have much exchange. So, you're one of many students that I meet in the course of my travels. So, I'll just remark. The enthusiasm with which you were participating in kirtan right from the time you came in, I noted. She's an enthusiastic kirtanier. And that said something about, you know, your spiritual inclination, spiritual interest. So I was like, wow, that's nice. I don't yet know you. So in the course of dealings, there's other people that, you know, you do relate more with, and so stronger relationships and more sharing and so on and so on and so on. So it's where there's compatibility, you feel that there's some trust and there's some trustworthiness. And in addition to kirtan, you can share confidential things. This is what's going on in my life, and I'm deciding about these things with my career, and there's my family and my mom and dad and relationships and da-da-da-da-da. With people that you feel are trustworthy and with whom you can relate well. So then those relationships become deeper. So your question was, how do I evaluate that? Experience, I guess. One of the things that I learned as a very new devotee, like in the first 3 weeks I lived in a temple, was I really don't know how to evaluate who's advanced. I had that, there's some things that happen. Because I really looked up to a certain person, like, wow, he's a role model. Because everything he does, he's so good at everything he does, and he's a crisp and clear thinker, and wow. And then he was gone. He just disappeared. And I realized I don't really have the right set of criterion. I better slow down a little bit and be thoughtful and work on my own communication and try to understand according to, you know, the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, who is moving nicely in the path of self-realization, and with whom I should then look to as a role model to aspire and, you know, learn from them. But, you know, that's one kind of relationship, and there's others. Some of the response that I gave to his question about, you know, progressing versus remaining attached. Those are some things. And it's try to make association with those that are loving at the same time detached. That is, they can say something to you because they see something that you need to hear, and they're not afraid to say it. And then when you hear, it goes, you know, wow, thank you. I'm thinking in the back of my mind. There's a situation with a friend, and th- three of us, we've been serving together for, I don't know, 25 years. And there's somebody over here, he needs to hear something from somebody. So the three of us are discussing how to best help this person who we care so much about that doesn't receive feedback so well. But he, you know, it'll help him grow. So how do we do that where he doesn't get recoil, but he takes it in? Because we care about him. He's dear to us. And we know that he has appreciation for us. We don't want to spoil that. We want to help him. So it's delicate. But if you can find a situation where somebody can give you honest feedback and you don't go, oh my God, what's wrong with them? They're being mean to me or something. That's a good situation. You're fortunate if you have that kind of a friend.
Huh? What did you decide?
Huh?
Like what? How did you
decide? We're still proceeding carefully, thoughtfully. The most important thing is we want the person to know where we're coming from as we care about you. He already knows that. But there's some sensitivities, there's some landmines out there. So we have to, like, you know, defuse the landmines before we, you know, it's delicate. I think, at the end of the day, Krishna's in his heart and Krishna's in our heart, and he trusts us as being trustworthy persons. It's just going to be, it's going to be a little rough at points because there's some attachments, and we don't want him just to leave his body attached. We want him to leave his body attached to Krishna and not attached to, you know, perceptions and loyalties. And we're trying to be his best friend. We're trying. Anyway, I'm more than answering your question. But if you can find such people, if you can establish such relationships with very caring people and hear from them as a friend, then you're very fortunate. And somebody that's, you know, a superior, an advisor, a well-wisher, a mentor, a guide, and somebody that's in that position in your life, you're very fortunate. And it's not many, it's even, you know, one or two or three, a few that can, you're doing great. Anything else? Okay.